Hello, everybody. I'm George from Ireland, and this is Lancaster House behind me. I'm not here primarily to talk about the building, but the Lancaster House Agreement, signed on the 21st of December, 1979. And this was what was going to really transition Rhodesia into Zimbabwe. So we don't want to go too much into the history, but in 1890, the pioneers arrived in what's now Harare, Zimbabwe. They claimed it as Rhodesia for the British Empire. They'd had some agreement with Lobengula, the king of the Ndebele people, or Matabele people. Anyway, he felt he'd been duped by the Rudd concession. He thought it was just about mining. It was mistranslated for him. There was fighting, blah, blah, blah. Well, really, the British and Afrikaners claimed it on behalf of the British Empire and ruled. They defeated the Chimurenga, an uprising. Okay, so they ruled both the Shona and the Ndebele people, as well as the Kalanga people. That was Rhodesia. There was Northern Rhodesia, which was Zambia. Southern Rhodesia was Zimbabwe. Fast forward to the 1960s, the United Kingdom was decolonizing, but there's a significant white minority in Southern Rhodesia. So they were up to 7% of the population, and they had largely ruled the roost. Very black, few black people had the right to vote. The black community was a high majority of the population. And so all the other African colonies were granted independence, majority rule, but that's because there are very few whites in any of the others. But the white community largely wanted to hang on to power. There are a few whites said we must have equality, but most whites wanted to give only a little bit of power to the black majority. Some said absolutely none at all. I've seen videos of them on YouTube, and some of the whites are outspokenly racist. Anyway, so 1965, that 11th of November, Remembrance Day, the Rhodesian government issued its unilateral declaration of independence, as in independence was not granted by the United Kingdom, was simply kept, the white immigrant community simply declared independence, giving minimal black representation to the black majority. So there was ZANU, Zimbabwean African National Union, and ZAPU, Zimbabwean African People's Union, the two black parties. The first one was Shona-based, the second one Ndebele-based, and they said, well, we're not having this, so we're going to use armed force because we're being denied our rights. We're not having equality. So we want democracy, they were saying, but they were Marxist tinged. So they began to fight against the Rhodesian armed forces. The Rhodesian armed forces, mostly white, some black men. They gradually put more and more black men into it. Don't want to give you a blow by blow account of the fight. The Chimurenga, as Zanla and Zipra call it. Zanla, Zimbabwean African National Liberation Army, that's ZANU's armed force, and Zipra, Zimbabwean People's Revolutionary Army, that's ZAPU's armed force. So anyway, Ian Smith was Prime Minister. He later proclaimed a republic. There were sanctions. Even South Africa withdrew support under American pressure. And so finally, in 1978, Smith agreed to what he said he would never agree to, which was African majority rule, because London's principle was no independence before majority African rule. Okay, so NIBMAR, you might call it. Sorry, NIMBAR, you might call it. Anyhow, so 1978, he agreed that the parliament would be two-thirds black, the cabinet would be two-thirds black, the prime minister would be black, so that was majority rule. But the whites, who were then maybe 6% of the population, were still getting 33% of the representation, so hugely overrepresented. They already had powers far beyond their numbers by their wealth and their education. But anyway, even that didn't fly, and so finally, he was obliged to make this Lancaster House Agreement. So Margaret Thatcher had come in as Prime Minister in May 1979, and she wanted the Rhodesia-Zimbabwe issue settled. The new government, Abel Muzorewa, who was a black man, who was leader of the United Africans National Council, a moderate black party, was Prime Minister. He was an Anglican bishop. So he agreed, and so he came here. There'd been the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting that August in Lusaka, the capital of Zambia, and obviously, ZAPU and ZIPRA were mostly based in Zambia, and whereas ZANU and ZANLA had been mostly based in Mozambique. And Mozambique is important because when the Portuguese were defeated, a communist government, very African nationals there, was helping them. So ZANLA and ZIPRA called this the Chimurenga, the second Chimurenga, the first one being the 1890s, like the uprising. The leader of the first Chimurenga, when Poor is hanged, said, "My bones shall rise again." And so many people felt he was spiritually resurrected. And that's why ZANU and ZAPU had chosen the name Zimbabwe, as in meaning like house of stone, this ruined ruined town of multi-story buildings. And when whites discovered it in the 1930s, they couldn't believe that black people had built it. Say, well, did the Portuguese get this far in, or did Arabs build it? But no, that realized what Africans were capable of, a highly sophisticated civilization. So the nationalists in Zimbabwe, they didn't want a name that was honoring Cecil Rhodes, their conqueror, as they would say, someone who's guilty of spoliations. They view him as a murderer, an armed robber, and so forth. So we'll choose this name Zimbabwe. Anyway, and that mixed race government from 1978, they even renamed the country Zimbabwe Rhodesia, had used the double name. But anyway, the Rhodesian delegation of Ian Smith, Hawkins, the Reverend Ndabangini Sithole, who'd previously been on the ZANU-ZAPU site, had come over to the side of this balanced government. He was there negotiating. Joshua Nkomo was there. So was Robert Mugabe, Edward Takere, Zvogobo, a few others whose names I can't remember, Chinamogo, I'm probably mispronouncing it, and so forth. So they negotiated here. Now, they're bugged by MI5, the British Internal Security Service. I don't know which hotels they stayed in, who knew their bottom lines in negotiations. And an African magazine sent that guy who wrote N at Eton, his name will come to me, to interview Robert Mugabe. So they negotiated through at the end of August, September, October, December. Was it going to happen? At one point, they thought the Patriotic Front might walk out. ZANU and ZAPU had coalesced into the Patriotic Front, lest they be pulled apart. ZAPU was more Chinese-influenced, and ZANU was more Soviet-influenced. And they did not like each other one bit. And living in Maputo, Mozambique, Mugabe, he was invited to some meeting, and Nkomo had sat in that chair, said, "If you think I'm sitting where that fat bastard just thought, think again." So there's a possibility they could be split, but that didn't happen. But the Zimbabwean delegation threatened to walk out at one point. They really didn't want to happen. There were severe sanctions on Rhodesia or Zimbabwe at that point, and the US government chose not to lift them for fear that might mean that the Rhodesian government would fight on. Anyway, Lord Soames was appointed new governor. The idea was to go back to colonial administration for a few months, elections, and then grant a legal independence. And that's what happened. So Lord Soames, Winston Churchill's son-in-law, he flew out to Harare, or Salisbury as it then was. And I've seen interviews with him several years later, said that really was frightening. The agreement hadn't even been signed, but we just had to behave like it was going to be signed. So it was signed. They agreed on various things, that there would be election on the basis of one person, one vote. All votes of equal were not going to be quite equal value. The whites were going to get 20% of the representation for 10 years. After that, the government in Zimbabwe was free to change it to votes on a completely equal basis. Okay, so what was going to happen about land, willing buyer, willing seller? They say that the whites had taken this land in the 19th century, so they were there's going to be land reform, and it's going to be financed by the British government, not the Zimbabweans themselves. There's sort of an amnesty. ZIPRA, ZANLA, and the Rhodesian army would merge into the Zimbabwean National Army, things like that. No war crimes trials, all the refugees to return. And the surprising thing is how it actually worked quite well. So Lord Soames went back, they all went back, the election was in the offing, and that was held, was it that April, and they're meant to disarm. So a Commonwealth force went out there of Kenyan, Australian, and British troops to supervise it. Lord Soames said the things, times we didn't intervene where he felt sometimes he should have. He was in Government House hosting a drinks party for Robert Mugabe, hailing how he'd come to admire his leadership, words which really stick in the craw these days. Now, obviously, Robert Mugabe was very evil, but then so was Ian Smith. A lot of civilians were killed by Ian Smith's forces, calling them terrorist collaborators. Torture was used on a fairly wide scale. And he was about maintaining an inegalitarian system. So despite it being racist and exploitative, the Rhodesian government was still better than what came later on. Anyway, so the elections went ahead, and people thought that the UANC of Bishop Abel Muzere would do quite well, but they didn't. So was there large-scale impersonation or cheating? I don't think so. Clearly, the Patriotic Front was much more popular than the white minority government. If you just look at the size of the demonstrations, so that's why, ZANU got about 60% of the vote, considerable percentage above that for ZAPU. The United Africans National Council got very few, like 7% of the vote. The whites got whatever, 20%, mostly the former Rhodesian Front Party, and that was it. So people thought there might be some sort of coalition. But actually, what surprised people was the scale and decisiveness of the victory of Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwean African National Union. And so it all went ahead according to plan. And there was a president, the Reverend Kanan Banana, who was sworn in, who was jailed in 1997 for homosexual acts. But anyway, so Prince of Wales Charles went out to hand over documents to see. They say, "We grant you back your sovereignty with the greatest goodwill and that was that ceremony. And Robert Gabriel Mugabe took the prime ministerial oath, and he was sworn in by a white Zimbabwean who'd been a judge, who'd been a fervent supporter of minority rule and the unilateral Declaration of Independence. So anyway, this building is used by the British Commonwealth, Foreign and Commonwealth Office, for various high-level conferences. That was the Lancaster House Agreement, held here just opposite. This is Green Park in London, and then it's a stone's throw away from Buckingham Palace. That is Buckingham Palace behind me. So Sir Sonny Ramphal, the Secretary General of the United Nations, he helped out a little bit, because his house, Marlborough House, you can't see it, but it's right behind this one. And that's the headquarters of the Commonwealth of Nations. So that's a little bit about the Lancaster House Agreement. And then the UK government reneged on some of it when Clare Short was International Development Secretary in 1997, saying, well, we're not going to pay for this, and we're a diverse government from different backgrounds. I'm Irish, the colonised, not the colonisers. Well, she's completely imbecilic, and we weren't colonised in Ireland. But in Zimbabwe, we Irish, we were the colonisers, not the colonised. So it's a new government. So the agreement is still binding on the United Kingdom, where there's a Labour or Conservative government in office. So an early success for Margaret Thatcher. And actually, Mugabe later praised the Conservative Party as being more mature than Labour, the Labour Party, whom he viewed as gay gangsters, Labour, which had been more sympathetic to his cause. And the Conservative Party at that time had included the Monday Club, which was sympathetic towards minority rule. And Mugabe even attended the British Labour Conference in the early 60s. Of course, he was jailed in Rhodesia from 1964, only let out in 1974, doing a lot of degrees in prison. But conditions were much more humane under Ian Smith in jail than they were under Robert Mugabe. Well, that's a little bit about the Lancaster House Agreement. And that April, it all went ahead. Some of the ultras, whites, thought it was some sort of coup d'etat to try and stop independence going ahead. They didn't. It certainly wouldn't have succeeded. It would have been absolute lunacy. And so that was it. So Lord Soames came back and managed to have quite a good relationship with Robert Mugabe and his wife, Sally Heffron, the Ghanaian, who died in the late 1980s of cancer. Mugabe's son had died whilst he was in jail. They wouldn't let him give him some benevolent parole. But then he started having an affair with his secretary, Gucci Grace, having, is it, three children with her. All right, so that is Lancaster of the Lancaster House of the Lancaster House Agreement. Thank you, everybody. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, then on PayPal, georgecallan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.